today, inside a care home where more than one in four residents have died since the COVID-19 crisis struck. Imagine life in a care home. You love the staff and you have regular family visits. And then lockdown comes and suddenly you can't kiss or hug or even see members of your family. Like for Doreen Stroud in Weymouth.
It is worrying, you know. I mean, you don't know how long it's going to go on for, do you? We're all staying in, no visitors, which is quite hard. I speak to my son and daughter, well, every day or every other day. I keep in touch with the family. I don't know what I'd do without them anyway.
It's hard for Doreen inside the home, and for her daughter, Debbie Cummins, outside of it.
We are missing not going in to see her. It's just being able to give someone a hug and tell them that you love them instead of doing it through a screen.
Let's be honest, despite housing some of the most elderly and vulnerable people in our society, care homes didn't really seem to be on the government's radar in the early part of this COVID-19 crisis. Talk of protective equipment and urgent testing tended to focus on medical workers in the NHS. And when ministers read out the number of dead each day,
918,
they meant dead in hospitals, not care homes. But figures suggest that in parts of Europe, around half of all coronavirus fatalities could be happening inside care homes. Luckily, Doreen's home is still okay, but hundreds of others in Britain are believed to have already been struck by this disease. That has forced confused and bewildered residents into isolation in their rooms as carers desperately try to limit the impact of this crisis. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, the story of one care home hit hard by COVID-19. Julie Roche has been a nurse for 39 years. She runs Westbury Grange Care Home in Buckinghamshire, owned by MHA, the UK's largest charitable provider of homes. It has space for 45 residents and provides specialist care for those with dementia. Let me just ask you about you. I mean, what does being a carer mean to you?
Well, I've been a nurse for 39 years, never ever wanted to do anything different. And obviously I worked in the NHS for a long, long time on, you know, frontline A&E and loved every minute of it. But being able to come into a care home, and I still want, even though I'm a manager, I still like to get my uniform on and do the hands-on. And I can't imagine ever doing anything else or ever leaving Westbury.
And what's the home like in normal times?
Lots of music, lots of dancing. We've still been loud and noisy through this because we've had to keep morale up.
Tell me about some of the residents. Are there some real characters in there?
Oh, amazing characters. I like nothing more than to come in the morning, go down to my residential dementia units. And I've just been talking about a gentleman this morning who sadly we have lost. Very cheeky, lots of banter. I don't have a bruise on the top of my arm anymore because his first thing was to give me a good punch on the arm and then give me a bear hug.
How did your care home start to prepare for COVID-19?
Well, we talked about it an awful lot. We have care home forums and lots of contact from the CCG and the local authorities. So we'd been to meetings and they'd already put things in place to support us and what would happen. So we had discussed it. But I think we were all just very shocked at how quickly it suddenly hit us, totally out of the blue. Sort of, it all sort of started at the beginning of March initially when the first case was diagnosed at Milton Keynes Hospital. And we had a phone call late on the Friday afternoon, and we had just lost a resident to natural causes. And they were just checking really to see if we had any beds, because they were going to be looking at discharging people very quickly who didn't need to be in hospital, and would we take people? And that was the first, really, it suddenly hit us that it was very, very close. And then literally within a week, we had our first confirmed case.
Do you remember how you felt when you found out?
I can remember the day. It was Sunday the 15th, and I was actually stood in Sainsbury's, and I nearly walked out without paying, if I'm honest. My deputy was on duty as a nurse, and she rang me. It was a gentleman who had been with us for over 12 months. He had gone into hospital the previous Wednesday, very, very prone to chest infections always, but would be fine one minute and very, very poorly the next. So we immediately called paramedics the minute we thought he was unwell. And COVID never crossed any of our minds at this point, because there was no, it was just a rapid onset. Literally within an hour, he was poorly. The family came back and said, oh, he's been admitted. They're going to treat him. As a routine, they've just tested him, but he'll be fine. So it was a great shock when on that Sunday, we had the phone call from public health to say he tested positive.
What did you do?
I sort of dropped everything and came straight into work. And literally within 2 hours, we'd heard his daughter came to speak to me and told me that he had passed away.
How did that feel?
I think we were all numb, just numb. We couldn't believe that he tested positive. But then I think it was suddenly reality. God, you know, we've got it in this home. It's been in this home. We now have to really get into sort of action and talk to the staff and obviously isolated all of our residents in their bedrooms as best we could.
Many of whom had dementia. I mean, did they understand what was happening?
No, most of them didn't. Maybe that is, you know, it was a good thing that they didn't understand. I did have one lady who's on my nursing unit, and obviously it's on the news constantly. She just was walking around, the news was on, and she came up to me and she went, what do I do? Where do I go to get away from this horrible virus? And that sort of struck me really quite deeply. And I just said to her, it's absolutely fine. We're here to look after you and we're going to keep you safe. And thankfully, she is absolutely safe.
So you lost one resident. What happened after that?
It just went crazy. We seemed to get other residents develop symptoms very quickly. So we lost our first resident on that Sunday. On the Monday, we sent another lady into hospital who we were very concerned about. We then had the urgent care team come in and swab two residents in the home. Literally within days, we were barrier nursing probably a dozen residents downstairs. And obviously they're frail and they've got other illnesses and other health issues. So they became ill very, very quickly. And, you know, sadly, one by one, we lost them. In the end, I think we sent four into hospital, and sadly, all four have passed away.
And that number was about to increase. When I spoke to Julie, this one care home had suffered 13 deaths. That's more than a quarter of their residents. How does that feel?
It's devastating. And if I'm really honest, I think there's some guilt there. And I know that's totally irrational because there's nothing more that we could have done either, you know, during or before to have stopped it. But I think, you know, you run a care home and you manage it.
Were you able to protect yourself and your staff?
Yes, we have. We've been very lucky. We've had all the appropriate masks, aprons and gloves. We have had staff that have gone off with symptoms, and I've had one or two that have been quite poorly but are now thankfully recovering. Certainly, I think we've had staff that have been scared. We've had the odd tears, and we're going to have a lot more, I'm sure, very soon once this hits us, what's happened. But I think the fact that they've seen myself and my deputy and we are out there on the floor working with them day in, day out has been a big support to them. I think they're just so totally committed to their job that they just come in and get on with it. And they've come in with such high spirits and such high morale. I've never been prouder. But, you know, we've made sure that all staff are not coming into work in uniform, not going home in uniform. We've been given so many uniform bags from local people to take our laundry home to wash. I'm certainly isolating from my husband when I go home.
In what way?
Well, as much as I can. He's been an absolute star. So he's in one bedroom, I'm in the other. You know, he's been my support at home. So I'm going home after maybe a 14-hour shift or even a 24-hour shift at times. And I don't have to do anything. You know, my meals are cooked, my bath's run, my uniforms are ironed for the next day.
What's your husband's name?
Michael.
Big shout out to Michael. What a lovely husband. Can I just take you back into the home? So you know COVID-19 has been there. You've asked your residents to remain in their rooms. Presumably they're feeling somewhat confused.
Yes.
And a bit bewildered. I presume you stopped family coming.
Yes, we have.
And so how can family see their loved ones? Is there any way?
Well, we've got tablets, so we're FaceTiming as much as possible. They're talking to them on the phone. People on the ground floor have seen them through the windows. The families are obviously devastated at their loss, but they've all still been so supportive. The lady that went into hospital and died, her two daughters literally visited. I could set my clock by them. 11 o'clock every morning, they came to visit mum. And, you know, we've had some lovely messages from them, and basically they're missing us.
Can you describe how you've been able to let loved ones say goodbye?
The one I think that probably got to me the most was a gentleman that had been with us for a couple of years, and his wife, his daughter, his granddaughter and son-in-law all came to the window to say goodbye because we knew he wouldn't be with us for much longer. And they stood outside the window, and obviously we'd moved the bed nearer to the window so they could see him and speak to him. They'd written cards, which they'd asked us to read, and that's very difficult to read out a card from his wife. And she also brought perfume. She always wore the same perfume. So she bought some nice clean flannels and a bottle of a perfume and asked me to spray it on the flannel and just put it near him so as he could smell it. There was some acknowledgement there. He absolutely knew they were there. He was in bed. He was tucked up and nice and comfortable, and he wasn't in any distress or any pain. I stayed that night and stayed with him, and he slipped away just before midnight.
Can I just, you've worked in end-of-life care in many ways for a long time. This is unprecedented, isn't it, that a family can't touch their loved one as they die?
I think these are things that will live with us forever, that we've seen things that we'll never forget. Because here we do a lot of end-of-life care, and I mean, that's an absolute privilege to be able to do that. You know, yes, we're looking after the resident, but we're also looking after those families and supporting them, whether that's just making sure they're fed and watered, they've got a bed, or just a hug, or just let them cry. It's been very hard dealing with this and not being able to give them that hug, you know, just that human touch. And also, obviously, going to the funerals, because we do make sure that when we lose somebody here, there is a representative from the home that will always go to a funeral. And, you know, the families have sent us in orders of service and what have you, so as we can see, but that's all very strange. So, you know, we're not grieving at the moment. We're not being able to grieve and say our goodbyes, because these are people that we have looked after for years, not just somebody that's come in and died.
There's a sense, Julie, that in this crisis, there has not been enough focus on carers. When we've talked about protective equipment and testing, it has tended to be more focused on NHS workers. Do you feel like care homes have been forgotten?
The NHS is amazing, and I've worked in it for years, and they're on the front line and they deserve everything they get. But I have to say, we did feel, and obviously it's now coming a little bit more to the forefront, but we did feel that we were a little bit forgotten. You know, we are looking after the most vulnerable people in our society, and they need the PPE. They need to make sure that they've got enough equipment. You know, as I've said, I work for MHA, so I'm very lucky that it's a big company and we've had the PPE delivered to us as we've needed it. But I do know that there are providers out there that aren't getting the correct PPE and they are putting themselves at risk. I spoke to a nurse that I know last week, and she had refused to go into a care home that had cases of COVID because they did not have the appropriate PPE, and that is putting them so at risk.
And this is a really risky time for carers, but they're carrying on.
I knew I'd always got a strong staff team, but I have got a team of staff here who have come in with not giving a thought to their own welfare. They've given up holidays. I've had phone calls on their days off saying, oh, I've got a few hours, shall I pop in, do a few hours for you. They're in happy, cheerful, and still giving 100%.
And just finally, does this experience tell us something about how Britain treats older people, how Britain values older people?
I think it does. I think sometimes when older people go into care homes, they're almost written off. As I said, when I was a young nurse and newly qualified, the last thing I wanted to do was look after old people. I wanted to be in the hospital in A&E and all the exciting things. But being able to come into a care home and look after elderly people, they've lived their lives and they've got so much to give and so much knowledge and so much love. And I do think they're slightly forgotten. Hopefully, I mean, I say hopefully because this is awful that it's something like this that has maybe highlighted care homes, but hopefully things, you know, will improve. I don't know.
Oh, Julie, thank you so much for everything you're doing.
Thank you.
Coming up, we speak to our social affairs correspondent, Rob Booth, who has been exposing the truth about what's been happening in care homes across the country. Rob, we've just spoken to Julie Roche, who you put us in touch with because you've been reporting on this. You've been speaking to people across the country. How have you felt when you've spoken to people like Julie and to others like her?
I mean, the first thing you notice is how stressed and harried they are in their voice. It's palpable, the pressure that they're under. But something else is the pain that they're feeling, because I think, unlike nurses and doctors who are often dealing with patients for weeks and sometimes months at a time, these people are often dealing with their residents for years and talk about them as family. And they get to know their families as well, because they come in and out. As care workers, they become part of those family units because they're a bridge, really, certainly when they're doing their jobs right. And the consequence of losing people who have that status in your life is really great and really traumatic. They are on the front line. They felt that they have been a sort of hidden front line and that they have not been acknowledged properly. That's changing now, thank goodness, and they're getting the credit they deserve.
You've talked about people working in care home feeling like they're on the kind of hidden front line. And I certainly think one of the things that struck me talking to Julie was about her staff turning up day in, day out in risky circumstances, sometimes even coming in when they're not on shift to help because they value their residents. It feels as if this is almost now a crisis within a crisis. We've seen some talk on this from government this week. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, said he does want to make it possible for relatives to properly say goodbye to loved ones. He's also promised far more testing for carers, although figures earlier this week suggested that while 48,000 NHS staff and their families had received tests, the number was just over 500 for carers. So there's clearly a lot to do. He also slightly weirdly held up a badge that he said would be a new brand for carers.
This badge will be a badge of honour.
And then it later emerged it had been announced a year ago. But what are the concrete steps that they're taking?
There's a few things have started to happen. They are now rolling out testing to care home workers and people inside care homes, but most importantly, perhaps people coming out of hospitals into care homes so that they're not transmitting infection. There are pushes on getting more PPE out to care homes. This is a big frustration at the moment. The advice on how to use PPE coming out of the public health authorities is sometimes conflicting and is confusing to people working in care homes, so more needs to be done on that. But there's one area which I think we're going to have to look at a bit more carefully, which is to do with pay and reward for what these care home workers are doing. Many care home workers are on some of the lowest wages in the country, on minimum wage. And there has been called for a kind of uplift up to, say, £11.50 an hour by one care home network to be funded by the government. Something similar has happened in Scotland, where the Scottish government have announced a pay rise, to recognise what is being done, but also to make sure that there are more people coming in to backfill the sickness and absence, which is running at around 10 to 15% in most care home networks. And to make sure that even though we're hearing these horror stories about what's happening inside care homes, people are still willing to go and work in them.
And what about the death figures? We watch ministers stand up every day at the press conference and tell us the number of people who have died in hospital. And we know that the true number must be much bigger than that, and that part of the answer must lie in care homes. In fact, European countries appear to have had a huge number of deaths within their care homes. I know that you've been trying to work out what the figures might be. How far have you got?
They're going up all the time. And this week I spoke to Care England and they told me that it's at least 1,400 people have died in care homes, and that is data that they're gathering from their members. And so those are suspected or confirmed, mostly suspected because there's not very much testing, cases of COVID-19. The Office of National Statistics released their data on Tuesday, which says something rather different, which is that there have been 217 deaths across the whole of England and Wales. So it's clearly wrong, but that's out of date because that runs up to the April the 3rd. There are estimates and speculations by other people in the industry that actually we're into several thousand now, including the Alzheimer's Society saying that. One of the difficulties here, of course, is that, and you hear this when you talk to the care home operators, is that many people in care homes who are dying of suspected coronavirus are on what they call end-of-life pathways anyway. In other words, they're expected to die, you know, in the short term. And it may be that they displayed coronavirus symptoms, but they're not being tested, so it's not clear whether they actually died of coronavirus or if they died of something else. So there's a murkiness to this and to these numbers, which is probably never going to be fully understood. But if we draw it quite widely and think about all the possible deaths, then the numbers are going to be rising through the thousands as the weeks go by. And certainly that is what we've seen from Italy, Spain, France, Belgium, where between 42% and 57% of deaths in snapshot studies so far seem to be happening in care homes.
42 to 57?
Yeah.
That is huge.
Yes, as a proportion of the total. But again, the caveat is all these different countries' data is gathered in a slightly different way. And whether people are actually dying because of COVID or if COVID is a contributing factor to an ongoing death that was happening anyway is something that we'll probably never know.
It seems to me that social care is always treated as inferior to the NHS, and that here we have another reminder of that. What could coronavirus mean for the care sector now and in the future?
Well, I mean, there are already calls for social care and the NHS to be kind of merged into one single system, given that people do flow across the boundary all of the time. And that if we'd have had that in place already, things might have been different in the way that we treated coronavirus in the care sector. I think the other thing, of course, is the same with doctors and nurses, isn't it? There's a public spirit now about these public servants, and there will be about care workers as well, which is something that will carry forward after this crisis has passed. And we should hope that society starts to value them as they should be and as they have shown their worth during this terrible time.
Rob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Rob Booth, Julie Roche, Doreen Stroud and Debbie Cummins. Do read Rob's brilliant reporting on this at theguardian.com, including an interview by him with Julie, as well as others working in the care sector. Before we go, I want to bring you some happy news, a story that I'm sure many of you have read by now about Captain Tom Moore, a 99-year-old war veteran who wanted to raise £1,000 by walking 100 lengths of his back garden before his 100th birthday. In fact, when he launched his campaign on April the 8th, he raised £70,000 in 24 hours. By Tuesday, that had become £1 million. And by yesterday, he had passed 14 million.
I really am speechless, almost. It's just fantastic, isn't it? It just shows that people are so pleased with our National Health Service.
What an absolute hero. Tom Moore turns 100 on the 30th of April. I hope he has a great birthday, even if it is during lockdown. That's it for today. A huge thanks to Julie Roche and all her staff at Westbury Grange in Buckinghamshire, and to Debbie Cummins and her mum, Doreen Stroud, who is being really well cared for by all those at Chestnut's residential home in Weymouth. Also, thanks to everyone else working across the social care sector. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef and Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Ian Chambers. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. I hope you have a lovely weekend. We'll be back on Monday.